This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24-pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed, and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Hour number two, Inside the Clubhouse. Judson Richards and Bruce Levine with you. Just a reminder, the Cubs take on the Rockies today in Cactus League action from Sloan Park in Mesa. Zach Zabin, Ron Coomer will be on the call starting at 2:55 today. So baseball, Cubs baseball, coming your way in just a little bit. Joining us now, former big leaguer. You can hear him on ESPN and, of course, the Starkville podcast with The Athletic as well. Doug Glanville with us on 6-7 The Score. Doug, good morning to you. Can we begin with the Tokyo series? What did you make of went down this week between the Cubs and the Dodgers?
Well, I mean, I can't help but underscore just the impact internationally. Just it's something the baseball has always tried to focus on in recent times to try to, you know, spread the game and celebrate it everywhere. And when you have stars like Ohtani and Yamamoto and Suzuki, all these incredible players that hail from Japan, it's just a great opportunity for them to not only return home, but to celebrate the fact that baseball has this cultural impact everywhere. And so that in and of itself was such a victory. So I enjoyed just watching that, come through, because it reminded me of playing in Puerto Rico or playing in other places and just seeing the impact the sport has globally.
Doug, first of all, welcome and thanks for taking some time with us today. Second of all, on this subject, it makes sense to me to go to Japan. It makes sense to go to Puerto Rico and open up. But when you go to England and you have a series, or you're planning on going to some other European city, does that really have any impact? Is baseball really ever going to have an impact in England or in France or any of the Eastern European countries?
Well, I certainly had a blast when we went to London last year. But it's more of a stretch, especially with, you know, a broad football or soccer, as we say, that you have other options and other sports that are really powerful and just part of the culture. I have a lot of family in England, so I just remember going down to Brighton, and which is at the shoreline of the southern part. And, I mean, just the fact that the football is king, there's no question about it. It runs the show. But the opportunity is like those have to be done consistently if you're going to have any shot, right? You have to be there and keep going back, and it's hard to do. And when you don't have players that hail from there, that can kind of be the bridge and be that diplomat, it makes it harder. The case of Japan, like you said, is a no-brainer because some of the greatest players in the game now are from Japan. And it's been a quick wave when you think back to when Hideo Nomo was pitching and how he was kind of solo in many ways. Now Otani has teammates that he's embraced and they're excellent. So that's a reason to not only go there, but to see that the opportunity is rich as well.
Doug, that was really maybe my biggest takeaway from what I watched this past week or last weekend. When the Cubs played the Hanshin Tigers or the Yomiuri Giants, I felt like I was just watching a regular season baseball game. There was no lopsided feel at all of what I was watching.
Well, that's the beauty of it, that you recognize that in sports played abroad, and it may be different in style in some ways, even when I played in Puerto Rico, which obviously part of the U.S., it was still a different flavor culturally. And you realize that, you know, the game can connect in so many other ways. And we think about unwritten rules in baseball, right? All these, and where do they come from? Well, a lot of times they're cultural. And when you open your arms wider to the not only the great players that come from all over the world, but just to really weave into the culture and make it reciprocal, you can get a lot out of it. Not you know, and I said not even the least of which is that the fact that, oh, they can play. They can hang. And World Baseball Classic and all these opportunities to show that if you're going to call it the World Series, you know, you got to let the world participate.
You're right. Hey, Doug, when you talk about managers, Judson and I were talking about the impact of Francona on the Reds, the impact of Council on the Cubs, even though he came in and they won the same amount of games they did prior to that, the year before they got in. What was your take as a player and now as an analyst of the game on how many games a manager of the quality of a Francona or a Council are worth, and is there really any good way to quantify it?
It's tough to quantify it. I mean, as a player, like, I love playing for Terry Francona, but we weren't very good. So it's like, so he was a great manager, and he was great with people. You certainly have to have the personnel. You certainly have to have the ability to make moves at the right time. For example, someone gets hurt, like the Dodgers last year, you lose a couple pitchers, you go get Jack Flaherty. You know, if you can't do that, you're not going to be able to continue to go to that next level, especially with pitching and the level of injury that we're seeing now. So that's a big part of it. And I remember talking to Craig Council last year in one of the pregame meetings, and this was early on when he was sort of just starting, and he said, well, you know, I had Josh Hader, so I just had to manage for like 8 innings.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, you know, so that having the personnel in certain roles and the ability to get more if someone goes down or someone's not playing well is a difference maker, which sometimes frames the success of a manager. I think Terry Francona, when I played for him in Philly, didn't have quite the same command and options with the X's and O's of the game, managing the bullpen, situational. But, you know, now with the Reds and sort of a young kind of team, you know, he has a lot of certainly options to run, as do the Cubs. And that could play more into, I think, Francona's game. He likes to cause havoc and give people green lights. But so, yes, are there just really good managers like Craig Council and just know the game? Absolutely. And can they win games because they push the right buttons? And absolutely. They also have to work with players to have the buy-in. I mean, that's a big thing. I remember getting traded to the Cubs in 2003 from Texas, and Dusty Baker was there, and he got the buy-in. And I was a perfect case study of it because I was pretty frustrated when I got traded because I was on fire in Texas. It was a free agent year, and we weren't necessarily going anywhere, but did I want to go to Chicago and sit on the bench? So, and that's kind of what happened. So, yes, it was nice to make the postseason, but my career was like never the same because I was no longer seen as a starter. But Dusty, who had a whole bunch of players like me, you know, Troy O'Leary, Mark Rudzulanik, Eric Karros, Tony Womack. These are egomaniacal starter players who started their whole career that he had to convince to be platoon players. And we bought in. We were like, okay, we'll have to put this ego aside and just play ball. And that's the hard part, because the great players may do what they do, but you got to keep the toxicity from taking over when people are disgruntled and it's August and you're 15 games out. Like, that's where a manager can really show his mettle.
Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Doug Glanville. Download the Circa app today. Doug's got a new Substack that he's going to tell us about in just a little bit as well. Doug, that was a really interesting story you just told. So let's take that now to the White Sox, right? Because have you thought about what it would be like to accept the job that Will Venable accepted? You lost 121 last year. You also then traded away Garrett Crochet, your best player. Although they do have Luis Robert Jr. But how do you approach a season and avoid any sort of toxicity and keep guys fresh for people or for team that may have already been penciled in for 100 losses?
A lot of patience. A lot of patience. And look, Will Venable, I talk to him from time to time. And, you know, I mean, you talk about right man for the job. I mean, you know, he's young, energetic, but also just tactical, really understands, dives in, sat in on meetings, analytics. You just have to have a lot of patience, because the advantage of today is we've seen teams really turn it around fairly quickly. Kansas City Royals, or, you know, you can see like a couple of moves, a couple opportunities. I mean, these are major league teams. They have mega talent. I don't care if you lost 120 games. You have really talented players on your roster who are first round draft picks. And, you know, you just have to figure out how to bring them together. And that seemed to be a big part of the White Sox problem. They were just disjointed and, you know, just didn't have that cohesiveness. They just couldn't find that cultural center. But, you know, Will Venable or anybody that's like kind of in tune with that could come in and say, all right, let's at least work on this, because he got the ability. And then eventually it's not just a half year project here. You have to look and say, well, it might take a couple of years, but if we build it right, it can sustain.
As an independent businessman like you are now, stepping away from your career as a baseball player, do you have a better understanding of business and the operation of teams, and maybe a different look at owners rather than what you did as a player? And this conversation is all leading up to 2027. We're being threatened right now out there with rhetoric about missing a year of baseball because of the owners wanting to establish a salary cap. Do you have a different perspective of it now, having stepped away as a player and being a part of the association? And what is your take about getting started early on some conversations that has never happened before in the history of, you know, the Players Association and Major League Baseball owners?
Well, I do have a lot more understanding, just because as I've tried to objectively cover the game, weighing everything, not just the player perspective, I think it matters that I have more information around, you know, the owner's point of view and the manager's point of view and the fans, and that helps you inform a more complete picture. And I always was proud of this moment back when I was with the Phillies. I did a really tough interview when I was, you know, one of the union reps for the team, about the possible strike. And, you know, we were on our way. It was like 02 and all the things were happening. And I sat down and did a kind of one-on-one. And I remember I got a phone call into the clubhouse from the president, David Montgomery of the Phillies. I was like, oh, I might be traded after this interview. And he called and said, I really appreciate that you showed both points of view, like that you gave some perspective to understand that, you know, we're running businesses, we have other pressing things that we're working on besides, you know, some of the issues the players are want or care about. So there is that element that you do come to understand. The tough thing right now is, if I go back the history of time of the Players Association and all the years that I played, the salary cap, a hard cap, was always like the bridge too far. That was always the bridge too far. And I just don't know how that plays out. Like, it's been disguised in taxes and slowdowns and things, but it's never been like, here's a cap. And I don't know how that's going to go, but I feel like that's going to be something that's not going to be simple. So if you start negotiating early, that doesn't mean you get ahead of anything, because a lot of the early negotiations just lead to like stonewalling and saber rattling and name calling, right. and like you're stalling and you're not serious, and that's not really productive either. So it's going to be delicate, and I hope for the game's sake it can keep going.
He's Doug Lamble with us on 6-7 The Score. Doug, your last year wasn't that long ago, right? 2004. Okay, maybe we're up to 21 years. Maybe I'm trying to convince myself that I'm younger. How different or similar is the game to when you played, right? We've got the pitch clock. We've got no shifting. We're trying out the ABS. Do you like today's game?
I do. And I recognize I have a little bias in this, and the analogy I would think of is this. I see my kids grow up on a day-to-day basis, and yeah, they get bigger and taller, and I go through things, but I generally like, okay, they're kind of like who they are. I've kind of seen this. But you compare that to like a grandparent who doesn't live in the area and comes in once a year, they're like, oh my goodness. What happened? You're like 6 feet tall now. So I feel like some of my teammates that I played with that are not as in tune with the game every day kind of see it as much more of a monumental shift. But when I've been covering the game for 16 years at ESPN and before that, I see the incremental. I see the kind of reasons behind all the changes and why. And so it feels a lot closer to me to like what it was, because I can still identify all the things that were, you know, the same, right? I still feel like, okay, that guy didn't hit the cutoff, man, and, you know, he's trying to steal a base and all those things. Sure, there's a pitch clock and there's all these other, maybe even an automated ball strike system, all these things that are coming. But I still love the game. I still really still love it. And I'm writing about it more, and I'm glad to finally be able to do that again, because I still find so much joy in the game even today.
The inventory of baseball players that can compete at the major league level seems to be the real challenge for the game right now. And mostly I'm talking about pitching and, power arms being able to hold up. How do you see the game being handled in the future, Doug, when you understand that the viability of guys just throwing 98 and the reliance on bullpens being more and more involved with guys that throw with velocity is not sustainable, and organizations will run out of inventory. How can baseball deal with this issue, if you believe what I'm saying is true or not?
No, I believe what you're saying is true, and it's a huge concern. It's got the attention on every level of science and Major League Baseball, because despite the fact that strategically, analytically, there's a purpose behind having a different pitcher every time and using a bullpen a certain way and having matchups third time through, all these things, it does work, right? That's the thing. Hitting has kind of been struggling the last few years, for sure. But the sort of drawback is that pitchers are getting hurt. They're max efforting. They have hard stuff, the shape of the pitches, all these things. And the game can't fully identify is what's this one thing. Because doing all these games, like I do all these games on Sundays and Saturdays in the last 4 years, and we talk to managers all the time, and they all say, hey, I'm trying to protect this pitcher. I'm trying to protect him. I'm trying to take his – they're doing all these things that they can do or think they can do to try to preserve a pitcher's arms, and they're still getting hurt. They're still getting hurt. So, you know, you can't even connect the dots to, like, Steve Carlton or Rick Sutcliffe, guys, you know, throw 300 innings or something. It's like – How did they do that? They weren't better athletes, right? I mean, we have all the science and technology and all the things, but they're just breaking down. And I'm sure max effort and all these things are part of it, but there's more to it. So how do you reverse it or get back to the days of Tom Seaver versus Mario Soto or something? Well, you know, you almost have to figure out a way to incentivize it, and knowing that organizations are going to say, well, we're not better off by Max Scherzer going a third time around. We're really not, especially when he's 40 now or whatever. But, you know, okay, if you give us this incentive, then maybe we will have get back to that boxing match between top two pitchers. But until then, look, it makes sense to me because I would face the guy the third time around. Like, oh, yeah, all right, he's got the drop-down slider. I know the arm slot. Yeah, I you know, and then I faced him five other times during the season because they were in our division. I mean, Greg Maddux I can see in my sleep, all these guys. But now I have to keep track of eight other dudes in the bullpen. One is a sinker ball that's just for me. Oh, that's a nightmare. So it's just so much harder to hit, and there's so much incentive to keep doing it as a pitcher.
So I have a solution, Doug. I want to hear your idea. I want to hear Judson's idea on it. In the minor leagues, you cannot throw harder than 94 miles an hour or it's a ball, okay? And obviously that's an extreme and it's never going to happen. But the idea of creating pitchers learning how to pitch in the minor leagues rather than just getting some stud out of college that's throwing 98, throwing him in there, his career is over in 4 years, he got 2 years in the big leagues. There has to be some innovator, someone that decides that teaching people how to pitch and relying on that is the way to go, and it has to be done by all the clubs. Is there any way to get that done?
Doug, by the way, can I jump in first? As a failed minor leaguer, yes, absolutely. No one can throw above 94 miles per hour more than however many times you said. Less in the fastball, I would absolutely upset that. I'd go for that, Bruce.
And I would as a hitter. Go ahead.
Right.
Throw three down the middle. Yeah, it's really hard because it's not just major league, right? The little league, minor league, you know, all the way up in youth ball, travel ball, they're all incentivized now because they know what gets them the outcome they want. They might have Tommy John surgery, but they're going to be like, hey, if I throw 98, people are going to see it on Instagram and that's it. So you have that problem. You can't just fix it at the major league level, even though that does set the tone. You have to discourage like drafting people a certain way. You have to, I think it's really hard. Because it works. That's the problem. Like, if I face a guy throwing 100 with a cutter, I'm just less likely to hit him.
So right.
So pitchers have no incentive to be like, let me slow down, or fine, they'll take their Tommy John. They'll go back and come back and be Shohei Ohtani. You know, like, so they're not really worried about it. So it's incentive and disincentive, and I'm not sure you know, how else you can even handle it because it's not, because it works. It's like guys taking steroids in baseball. Like, I'm hitting 60 home runs and I'm getting paid and fine, you suspend me for 80 games. So what? I just lost a half a year of pay, but I signed a 10-year deal. So until you address the spoils of the game, you're gonna keep getting people to try to go for what gets them the best results and what gets them paid.
Doug, I'm looking at it now. Tell us about your new Substack.
Very excited. You know, I love writing. That's how I came into sports media as a writer, New York Times. And the feedback, it's reciprocal. It also takes me back to my childhood growing up, loving the game and the poetry of it. My dad used to write poems. My mom used to engage in sport, you know, for social change. It's just always been a big part of my family, and my brother taught me the game. And writing is a slow, patient work to really celebrate it. And I wanted to get back to it. So it's harder and harder today to kind of be a columnist in the traditional sense, to write every week because there's so many one-offs and so many distractions and it's just hard. And there's not a lot of career building in the industry to say, hey, let me bring you as a columnist and develop you and edit and teach you how to write, as we just talked about with pitching. So I said, all right, well, I've done this a long time and I want to get back to writing. So I launched a Substack and called it Welcome to Glanville. And I'm just going to write a lot of baseball just about different things. And this past week was the launch. So we wrote about robot umps. I wrote about the golden at bat, that discussion. Wrote about spring training. I'm posting another one today about spring training and the fans. But really the main thing is it's a place I have a community to engage fans. And I'm a fan. And so a lot of the people that are chiming in and making comments are able to really see an exchange and with me and others who are just, you know, love the game and want to love discussion on the readings and different things that I'm going to present. So I'm doing this thing called Unboxed, where I had to find a reason to go through all these boxes that are in my garage that I keep carrying around. So I'm opening these boxes. I'm like, oh, my goodness. That's like Michael Jordan spikes, you know, which I actually have one of them. So
what?
I want to just write about them. I just want to write about them. So I'm pulling things out of boxes and writing. And ultimately, there'll be like, there won't be a paywall. There will always be a unpaid free part. There will ultimately be a paywall in some part, only for like one-on-one engagement, not one-on-one, but like group engagement, Zoom calls, all kinds of stuff I'm going to throw at it. But it's really just to have a place to go. And there will be always a free part where people can just continue to send in their thoughts. So welcome to Glanville. It's launched, and I'm having a blast. I'm really loving the community and just talking to the fans, because I'm still a fan myself.
What I wouldn't give to go through some boxes and find a Michael Jordan worn cleat would be very cool. Doug,
yeah,
looking at it now, I read actually Why Baseball's Golden At Bat Fools Us. I thought it was great. Very easy to find. Thanks so much for your time this morning, Doug.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Really easy to find. Doug Lill. It's DougGlanville.substack.com. You can also just go to Google and check out Doug Glanville and Substack. It is right there. Good stuff from Doug. Coming up next, Bruce, let's keep it moving. How much will the Tokyo series affect the Cubs? We'll ask Ron Coomer next. You're listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin Steele gave up 5 runs in 4 innings. The next pitch is a bouncing ball off the glove of Dreyer. And Shaw will be safe at first.
I don't know if there's ever been a hitter call up to the scorer's booth and say, please don't make that a hit. Because I don't want to look at that being my first big league hit for the rest of my playing career.
This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. I'm Judson Richards. He is Bruce Levine. Now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline, the voice you just heard, Ron Coomer. Download the Circa app today. And a reminder, the Cubs take on the Rockies today in Cactus League action from Sloan Park in Mesa. Zach Zabin, Ron Coomer, they will be on the call beginning at 2:55. Coom, thanks for warming up that voice with us today. You really didn't think that was a hit for Matt Shaw, did you?
Oh, my. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are we doing, Judson?
Bruce? Doing great.
Yeah, that's not how you want your first big league hit to to looks, that's for sure. You know, I sometimes voice my opinion maybe a little too strongly on the air, but it is the big leagues. Last time I checked, and we have a gloves, and you know, if a 12-year-old can make that play in Little League, I think a big leaguer should make the play. So that's kind of where I sit with that one.
Coom, I actually saw your reaction to the play, which made me go back and look at the play. You know, there's the term like a room service hop, and then there's literally putting the room service like at the foot of the bed. Like that was a blatant error. That was called a hit. Yeah.
I mean, you know, even though the pitcher should stay on the dirt for most of their, you know, time, he's still got a glove. You know, you got to catch the ball. And, if, you know, like if you throw it to him, you got to catch it or, you know, something like that. So that was one of those things. I don't understand. We got to do a better job of official scorekeeping than that. We just do.
Coom, you broadcast the two games. We get the reaction from a lot of the fans about 0-2, what a disaster. We know there's 160 games left, but what were your takeaways of the 2025 Cubs from those two games? Do you put much credence into it at all?
I mean, a little bit, but, you know, you're playing two ball games in Japan. You're playing the best team in baseball by far. You know, I think there's the Dodgers and then there's everyone else. So, and Bruce, the other thing too is the thing you and I talk about a lot when we're sitting here in spring training watching games is there's the win factor of knowing how to win. And the Dodgers have figured that part out. They've got a lot of guys that know how to win games and win big games. And, you know, and that's what they did. They didn't make mistakes. They pitched it well enough. Cubs offense didn't do their job well enough with runners in scoring position to make a difference. And at the end of the day, you know, the Dodgers win two ball games, you know. So is it a big deal? It probably is for the guys that played and for our fans. They want to see, you know, the Cubs win. But, you know, we're barely out of the starting blocks in a marathon. So let's not overemphasize the first two games, and now the season's, you know, there's no reason to watch anymore or listen.
Coom, do the Cubs have that makeup for the DNA that you're talking about of just simply knowing how to win, right? My biggest issue with Tokyo was, I don't care if it's Los Angeles, Chicago, or Venezuela, if you get the Dodgers without Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts, then you should split a game. Just split a series, a two-game series, right? But that DNA you're talking about, do you see that the Cubs have that makeup to go and find it?
Yeah, no, I think they do. I think there's players out there, you know, for the most part, the guys the Cubs are featuring out there day after day have all won. I mean, they've been winners all their lives, so they have it. I don't agree with your statement that because Freeman and Betts weren't in there, you know, you got to split that series. You don't got to do anything in the first two games. But to your point, you know, you would sure like when you got the Dodgers not at full strength to win a ball game. I'm not, you know, denying that fact at all. But, you know, there's still that pitching element that, you know, pretty much, you know, Dodgers went out and they had two really good starters, even though game two didn't work out for them the way they wanted. Their bullpen is very strong with some good arms and, you know, throw strikes. And they didn't make mistakes. The Cubs lost because they made mistakes. They didn't lose because the Dodgers beat on them. They lost because they made some mistakes. You walk guys in front of Ohtani. You know, you can't do that. I mean, that's just, you know, you can't do that. And they did that multiple times. And then you don't make a play or you try to make, as Tom Kelly, my old manager, would say, the Superman play instead of just getting it out. And you cost yourself either an extra 90 feet with a guy advancing bases or, you know, costing yourself a run. And the Cubs did both of those things. So, you know, it is what it is. You play and you're trying to do well. And I don't think there's any reason for alarm with what happened.
Coom, I remember sitting many times in the press box with you guys in your booth talking about the Cubs last year in May and June and throwing our hands up as we were talking about the offense and saying, where is it? Obviously, Bellinger got hurt twice, didn't have quite the year that he had the year before. That leads me to my question about Kyle Tucker. As Tucker goes, so goes the Cubs. Does he have to slug for them to be an impactful offense this year?
Yeah, you got to have run. Someone's got to be the guy that's the big run producer, right? That's the one thing that I look at with this club. You know, you talk about, okay, we got slug, we got on base, we got all these, you know, the war. What's his war? Well, you know, at the end of the day, you don't win with war. You don't win with slug. You win because you put runs on the board more than the other team. And this team needs to figure out the identity of who's going to get on base and score those runs. And I think we got an idea. Ian's that guy up at the top of the lineup. He's great at it. He's great at getting on base. He needs to be scoring a lot of runs, and you got to have somebody in the middle of that lineup that's driving in the runs. And at the end of the day, however you do it, whether you hit it out of the ballpark or not, but Tucker has been that guy in the big leagues. He's the leader of the, you know, leader of the gang when you start looking at, you know, his 23 home runs and 300 plus at bats last year. They need him to be that guy. And I think he will be, Bruce. I don't see any reason why he would not be that guy.
Ron Coomer with us now on Inside the Clubhouse. Coom and Zach Zaidman, they have the call. Cubs and the Rockies beginning at 2:55 today on The Score. Coom, I was just looking over the lineup these first couple games. What does Pete Crow Armstrong need to do? I'm not saying he's deserving of it now, although it wouldn't shock me. But what does PCA need to do to get to the top of the lineup, to hit leadoff?
I think for Craig Counsell, and that's the most important, for me, it doesn't matter. It's for Counts. He's got to be an on-base guy. He's got to get on base more. So that's until he shows that he can do that regularly, he probably will not hit at the top of the lineup. So that's what he has to do. He's everything in baseball years ago that you looked at as a leadoff guy, he brings all those things to the table. Outside of the strikeout. So if he can cut down on the punch outs, he did make huge strides this spring, I felt, using the other side of the field and getting some base hits to left, shooting the ball in the hole between short and third, and understanding that there's some guys that he can look to do damage against, and then there's other guys that you go, wow, this is a tough matchup for me. I need to take what they give me and maybe use the other side of the field and not look to hit a home run because the strikeout really, you know, ends up being a high percentage. So as he's learning that skill, he'll probably hit down in the lineup a little bit until he becomes that guy that, you know, can have more consistency in getting on base for Counsell.
Coom, how creative will Craig Counsell be with the Shaw Workman combination and possibility at times of a platoon, possibility of Workman playing other positions, using that left-handed bat that has power in it, a pretty finished product at third base defensively, Shaw not there. I think we've seen from Counsell, Coom, patience, but also a desire to win at the same time. How do you think he's going to handle that situation?
I think that situation, Bruce, is going to play itself out. Baseball has a way, as you know, of things kind of working themselves out. And that's going to be determined by the play of Shaw, both offensively and defensively, and the play of Workman. If you're looking at it and you go, okay, what do we have? I think Workman has definitely showed, you know, the ability to play on the defensive side, which, if you're not an everyday guy, boy, you really need to be able to do that if you're going to be an infielder. You got to be able to catch the ball and get outs. He showed he can do that at multiple positions. And he's got big-time pop in his bat. The other thing I love about him is he's got great speed. So Shaw runs well. He's got a lot to offer, that's for sure. But I think how well Shaw does day in and day out will determine the playing time of Workman. I really believe that. But they have both, Workman has had just an incredible camp, and Shaw is doing just fine, you know, and it was his job going into spring. So he's got to keep it, you know, as all young guys do when they first get to the big leagues, you got to keep your job, and that comes with production.
Yeah, Gage Workman's legal middle name is Tater, so you better be able to hit when that is your middle name.
Right.
Coombe, what you read on the back end of the rotation?
Well, I think it's kind of worked itself out. You sent Hicks down, and he's going to be in Iowa throwing and stay in the rotation in Iowa. So you're looking at, you know, the guys that they signed. I think you're, you know, until I'm blanking now.
Boyd.
So you've got, what's that?
You think about Boyd?
I think Boyd's going to be in the fourth spot. Colin will be in the fifth spot for right now. Mm-hmm. The question, the big question mark to me is how often do you need the fifth starter right now? That's the one thing early in the year with off days and things like that. Do you need the fifth starter, or does that guy, Colin Ray, go into the bullpen and throw in the pen? And you know, so that's the one thing that you're looking at. Right, I that's the way I look at it right now.
Let me interrupt you and say they have 13 games in 14 days to start
right
the year.
Yep.
Yeah. So with that in mind,
we're in a dome stadium. We're in Sacramento, and then we go to Wrigley, right? So that's kind of the issue, right, Bruce? Or lack of issue, you're going to play. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you will need them first two rotations through.
My question to you is, you keep Ben Brown stretched out. How do you do that? Because we know they still think he's a starter down the road, but he's got, you know, that arm that, you know, the first month of the season, maybe he's your middle guy. He's your guy that goes in and throws three innings twice a week.
Well, we kind of saw Counts kind of played his hand a little bit in Japan when Brown came into the game. He stayed in the game for 2 2/3. So he threw upwards of 50-some pitches. Right? I think he was probably 55 pitches that day, Bruce. So to me, when you look at it, you go, if Count's going to put him in there in the middle of the game, he's probably going to try to keep him in there and not just think he just comes out right away. Because the first inning, I think he gave up a run or two, and he just ran him right back out there, and he stayed out there. So I think that's what he's going to try to do. Whether that can play itself out is to be determined by how well the guys do, you know, in the rotation, you know, at the beginning, you know.
Coombe, season begins in just 5 days. Deep breath. I know it's a grind. Begin in Arizona against, at least you got a nice travel to get started there against the Diamondbacks. But thanks for joining us this morning. We'll be listening this afternoon.
Guys, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This is always my favorite time of the year. You're getting the season started, so the grind is there, but I don't really look at it that way. I look more like, let's get going. It's time.
It is absolutely time.
Ring the bell. Let's play.
Let's play. There he
Thanks,
is.
Buddy.
Thanks, Ron. Ron Coomer with us this morning. Again, a reminder, Zach Zabin and Ron will have the call today, 2:55 on the score. The Cubs and the Rockies will be back at it stateside before things begin yet again. Thursday in Arizona for the Cubs, and then the White Sox will be hosting the Angels on Thursday at Guaranteed Rate. Bruce, let's pick our division winners next. You're listening to 6-7 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, final stop for us. Judson Richards, Bruce Levine with you inside the clubhouse. A great show we put together today. You missed anything, check out the Odyssey app and the rewind function. Davis Martin pitched with the White Sox. Joined us at 9:30. Doug Glanville, a great conversation with him at 10 o'clock. And Ron Coomer got us really back on track stateside with the Cubs. Cubs and the Rockies on the score, 2:55 today. Coomer joined us at 10:30 this morning. The Odyssey app, you can find it all there. Bruce, you ready to rip through our preview, our picks for divisions, maybe get a little MVP and a Cy Young in there?
Let's go, buddy.
All right, here we go. Let's begin the NL West. 104 is the projected win total for the Dodgers. I went out on a limb. I also chose the Dodgers to win this division.
Dodgers for me as well. Arizona, Padres, Giants, and Rockies. That's the rest of the division for me. Let's keep going.
Okay, NL East for me. I got to admit, I'm a Schwarber and a Harper guy. I'm just, this is why I'm not a great gambler. I root too much.
Right,
I got the Phillies in the NL East.
I'm with you. Phils, Braves, Mets, Washington, and the Miami Marlins.
Okay, NL Central, despite the Brewers getting to the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years, I've got the Cubs in this division. They've earned it with on paper. I think they're going to earn it on the field.
Have you been looking over my shoulder? Cubs, Braves, Reds, Pirates, Cards.
There you go.
That's how we have it. Let's go to the American League.
All right, why don't I let you go first on this one, the AL West.
AL West is going to be the Houston Astros, Texas Rangers, Seattle Mariners, Oakland, and Angels on my list.
All right, we are the same there. I also threw in a little bit of a troll with a Cam Smith Rookie of the Year, but we can discuss that another time.
I like that.
AL East.
Baltimore, Yankees, Boston, Tampa, and Toronto. I know that you didn't pick the Yankees. I know you picked Boston, but go ahead.
I did not pick Boston. I picked Baltimore, although you will hear a Red Sox from me in just a moment. Finally, the AL Central.
Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, and the White Sox. Yeah, Detroit off of just 2 really good months of baseball last year. I really like their young team. Skubo, best pitcher in the American League. So with that in mind, did you go against me on this one?
I did not. Bruce and I, we are operating in the same brain. I don't know if we went that obvious, but we just went chalk. Okay.
All right, so MVP National League, what do you got?
MVP National League, I'm going with a grown-up Fernando Tatis Jr., 26 years old.
Oh.
This guy hit 42 home runs in 2021, kind of derailed there, back on track. I think Tatis puts it all together in San Diego.
Nice step out. I'm going with the chalk in Ohtani as your MVP. I'll go first on the National League Cy Young. It's Paul Skeens for me. Have a hard time not picking him.
I went with Paul Skeens as well. By the way, MVP for the American League?
Aaron Judge for me.
I went with Bobby Witt Jr. And your Cy Young for the AL?
Is Garrett Crochet.
Oh, I did the same, Bruce. Look at us. And you know what? I still will say that the White Sox will win that trade. How about that?
Outstanding. Can't wait for the beginning of the season. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Look forward to doing shows again with you. And bring on baseball. Thanks again for all you did today.
Bruce, always enjoy joining you. Robbie Toronto, great job behind the glass there. A reminder, Cubs baseball coming your way at 2:55 today. Zach Zaman, Ron Coomer against the Rockies. They will match up. Don't go anywhere. 6-7 The Score continues next.